I'm Stuart McLean, and this is the Vinyl Cafe. One night at dinner, a Sunday night in September, late September, Morley said, "I've been thinking about Christmas." Me too, said Sam. Dave gasped. "And I was thinking," said Morley, "that it would be fun this year." Dave was shaking his head slowly back and forth now, unconsciously, staring at his wife while a confliction of emotions flicked across his face like playing cards. Despair, hope, confusion, and finally the last card, horror. "I was thinking," said Morley, "it would be fun if we made presents for each other." Dead silence. Stephanie dropped her fork. "What?" she said. Sam said, "Everything I want's made out of plastic." "Does anyone know how to mold plastic?" Morley said, "I don't mean every present. I don't mean we have to make everything. I thought we could put our names in a hat and we could all draw a name and we'd have to make a present for the person whose name we drew." Sam said, "I like exploding stuff too." "Exploding things are good, especially if they're made out of plastic." Stephanie said, "God." Dave was nodding, a small smile playing at the corner of his mouth. Two nights later, Morley wrote everyone's name onto a piece of paper, and then she tore the paper up and folded the paper pieces and put them into a pot, and she had everyone reach into the pot and choose a name. "No one say who they get," said Morley. What if you choose yourself," said Sam. But no one chose themselves, and no one said who they got. In fact, no one seemed particularly interested in who got whom. Morley had hoped that everyone would be excited, but no one was excited at all. Several uneventful weeks went by, and everyone was busy, and only Morley, who was the busiest of all, was thinking about Christmas. The night they had pulled the names out of the pot, Morley had waited for the last piece of paper, and when she unfolded it, she had read her son's name. And now it was the middle of October, and she had thought long and hard about what she could make a 10-year-old boy for Christmas that he would enjoy. And she was stymied. She didn't know plastics. She didn't know explosives. Anyway, she wanted to make her son something meaningful. Dave was no help. "There's something about boys you have to understand," he said. "They aren't meaningful." The idea of building a chair for Sam came to Morley like a bolt out of the blue. She saw a brochure advertising a night course at the local high school. 10 Monday nights, $200. All materials included. Morley checked the calendar. She'd be finished a week before Christmas. Morley imagined building a big, comfy chair, a chair you could get lost in. She imagined Sam as a grown man reading the paper in the chair that she had made. She imagined him surrounded by his family. She imagined him saying, "Your grandmother made this for me when I was 10. She enrolled in the course and promptly missed two out of the first three classes. First time was work. The second time, her mother had the flu and she had to take her supper. But she didn't miss any more after that, and she applied herself as diligently as she could. And although every step was a struggle, each screw, nail, and saw cut a mystery of momentous proportions, and although her chair was emerging so much slower and tenuously than all the other chairs in the class, Mondays, the night she got to work on it, had become Morley's favorite night of the week. She loved going to her chair class. The only thing that spoiled it was that no one else in her family seemed to have embraced the holiday project. She was alone on this Christmas journey. She asked Stephanie about it one night. You don't understand," said Stephanie. "We're different, Mom. You're into the spirit of Christmas. I like the other stuff." The other stuff, said Morley. The shopping, said Stephanie. Clothes. Shopping and clothes, said Morley. And the TV specials, said Stephanie. Then one morning when Sam was getting up from the breakfast table, he looked at Morley across the kitchen, and he said, I want to learn how to knit. Now, there are seven words that sum up the challenges of motherhood. What's it like being a mom? It's like standing in the kitchen in your robe, half asleep, desperately trying to wake up and figure out what you say when a 10-year-old boy tells you he wants to learn how to knit. Morley gave Sam his first knitting lesson that night in his room. Morley took the needles from him and did the first row herself and handed them back and said, okay, now do exactly what I do. After an hour or so, he sort of had it, more or less. What is it you want to knit, said Morley. A coat, said Sam. Sam had chosen Stephanie. Morley had to teach him again right from the beginning the next night. And again two nights later. He did fine as long as he kept going, but every time he put the needles down, he lost track. Eventually he got it, however. By the beginning of November, Sam was good enough to sit in front of the television and knit while he watched TV. But whenever Stephanie appeared, he'd thrust the needles into Morley's hands or stuff them under the couch. So Morley hauled an old black and white portable out of the basement and set it up on his bureau, and he sat in his room all weekend, the needles clicking away like a train. My fingers hurt, he said on Saturday night. The next weekend, he was invited to Jeremy's house for a sleepover, and he wanted to know what he could take his knitting in. Morley was afraid he'd get teased, but she packed it up nevertheless, and he headed off with his toothbrush and his sleeping bag and his bag of wool. And at 9 o'clock, Jeremy's mother phoned and said, you're not going to believe this. You know what they're doing? They're downstairs watching Lethal Weapon 3 and knitting. Suddenly, everyone wanted to knit. Suddenly, knitting was the thing to do. The next weekend, there was a hockey tournament in Whitby. And Dave drove Sam and Jeremy and Tim and Jeff. They all sat in the back, he said. And they were talking about hockey and the game and how they were going to cream the team from Whitby, the kind of stuff you'd expect to hear from a backseat of little boys. And then one of them said, damn it, I dropped a stitch. And then they'd talk about hockey some more, and they'd be quiet, and all you heard was the clicking of their needles. And then someone would say something like, look how long Jeff's is. Jeff, you're going so fast. You must have done this before. It was wonderful. But Morley didn't think it was wonderful at all. As far as she could tell, her Christmas project was headed off the rails. She was worried about Sam. She thought he was getting compulsive about the knitting. He'd disappear into his room and sit on the edge of his bed and knit for hours. And he kept unraveling everything he did. It's fun to destroy it, he said. I like the feeling of the knots coming undone. It didn't seem healthy. But that wasn't the worst of it. On Saturday afternoon, while Dave was in Whitby, Becky Turlington had shown up at the front door. Is Stephanie home, she asked. She was holding a package wrapped in brown paper. No, said Morley, Stephanie's out shopping. Becky had turned to go, but then she had stopped and held the parcel up and said, "Tell her the present's ready. Tell her she owes me 15 bucks." She had shown up twice more that afternoon. "Tell her I need the money," she said. Morley was fairly certain that Stephanie had pulled Dave's name out of the pot on that night in October, and that placed Morley in a terrible position. She wanted to talk to Dave about what was happening, and Morley didn't want to hurt him. Anyway, as far as Morley could tell, Dave hadn't begun anything himself. There was barely a week to go before Christmas, and her entire project was turning into a fiasco. Her chair was a mess, Stephanie was cheating, and Dave thought Sam's knitting compulsion was cute. "Jacques Plante used to knit," he said. "What?" said Morley. "Jacques Plante was a goalie for the Montreal Canadiens," said Dave. "I know who Jacques Plante was," said Morley. "He was the oldest of 11 children," said Dave, "and they were poor, and his mother needed his help to make clothes for his brothers and sisters. When he was in the NHL, he knit his own underwear." "What's your point?" said Morley. Jacques Plante said knitting calmed him down. "You think Sam needs to knit?" "I have a friend," said Dave, "who believes knitting improves hand-eye coordination. He thinks the reason Jacques Plante was such a good goalie was because of all that knitting." After dinner, Sam called her into his bedroom. He was crying. "I'll never finish the coat," he said. He was pointing at the sum total of his knitting, a rectangle of blue wool about 6 inches wide and a foot long. One side of the rectangle was completely asymmetrical. Couldn't maintain constant tension as he worked. Each line was coming out a different length. It's lovely," said Morley. "No, it's not," said Sam. "I hate it." And he began to unravel it right in front of her. Morley brought Sam's chair home on the Monday before Christmas. The next night, Dave found her in the basement crying. She had a bolt of beige corduroy at her feet. She was trying to tack a huge piece of foam to one of the arms. Dave watched her for a moment without saying anything. Then he reached over and he touched the top of the chair. The legs were uneven, and it wobbled unsteadily. "It's pathetic," said Morley, dropping her hammer on the floor. "It looks like it was made with a lot of love," said Dave. "Looks like it was made by a 2-year-old," said Morley. "Well, it hasn't been covered yet," said Dave. "Any chair without upholstery is going to look awkward." "Pathetic," said Morley. "Not awkward." Dave looked at her, and he said, "I have a suggestion. Can I make a suggestion?" Morley didn't say anything, but she didn't walk away. And Dave said, you could spend the next few days wrestling with that material, and you'll cover that chair, and we both know what you're going to end up with. Cover that chair with upholstery, and forgive me, but you're going to end up with a bad chair." Morley nodded. Dave said, "Forget about the foam padding. Forget about the upholstery. Don't put fabric on it. Put wheels on it. What you have down there isn't a chair without covering. What you have down there is a go-kart without wheels. You put wheels on that thing and you'll have one very happy little boy on Christmas morning." The next night after supper, Sam called Morley into his room. He was frantic. "The needles won't go through anymore," he said. He was waving at a pile of wool lying on its bed, another 6-inch square of knitting, each line of the square getting tighter, giving his work the appearance of a triangle. "You have to relax," said Morley. "I only have 2 days left," said Sam. 2 days is not a lot of time," said Morley. Sam shook his head in vigorous agreement. "But it should be enough time for a pro like you to knit a scarf," said Morley. "I'm knitting a coat, not a scarf," said Sam. "Oh," said Morley, "I thought you were knitting a scarf. Let me start it for you." On Christmas Eve, after Sam and Stephanie were in bed and the last present was wrapped and under the tree, Morley called Dave down to the basement. "Can you help me carry this upstairs?" she said. She had taken the wheels off Sam's old wagon and attached them to the bottom of her chair. Dave climbed into it and smiled. She had left the wagon handle in place so it rested between his legs like a joystick. "You'll love it," he said. And then he screamed. She was pushing him towards the washing machine. First gently, then faster and faster. "Where's the brake?" is the last thing he howled. They could see light spilling out from under Sam's door when they went upstairs and heard the sound of his needles rocking together. "He's still at it," said Morley. "What should we do?" It was 1 in the morning. "Come to bed," said Dave. "His door is shut. He wants to do this by himself." "He was working on a scarf," said Morley as she prepared the bed, "but this afternoon it changed into a headband." "Wasn't going to be big enough for a scarf. When I suggested the headband, you know what the little bugger said? Said, but isn't her head the fattest part of her?" "It's the most pathetic headband you've ever seen. God, I hope she'll wear it. At least around the house." "He's going to love his go-kart," said Dave. Morley was sitting on the edge of the bed. She turned around. "Stephanie chose you," she said. "And there's something you should know about her present." "No," said Dave. "Don't tell me anything. I want to be surprised." Morley stood up and walked toward the bedroom window. "Don't worry," said Dave. "It'll be fine." And so it was. Stephanie, it turned out, had not paid Becky Turlington to make her father's present. She had written her grandmother in Cape Breton and asked her to ship a photo of Dave and his father to the Turlington's house, COD. It was a photo that had amazed Stephanie the moment she saw it, which had been 2 summers ago when she had gone to Big Narrows for a week by herself. The picture was taken when Dave was 5 years old, and in it he is standing on the piano bench in the parlor, which makes him about the same height as his father's bass fiddle, which they're both holding between them, and laughing, both of them. Stephanie's grandfather's head moving backwards and to the side. Her father, a little boy in the picture, starting to fold over at the waist, his hand moving to his mouth, the way Sam's hand moves in moments of hilarity. When Becky Turlington gave her the picture, Stephanie took it to a photographer and had a copy made, and sent the original back to Cape Breton, and then she had her copy framed. It was wrapped and hidden in her cupboard 2 weeks before Christmas. But 3 times she had opened it so she could look at it, and 3 times she had to wrap it up again. But Morley didn't know any of this as she climbed into bed, and as she fell asleep, she was worried about Christmas morning, about Stephanie, and about the go-kart, about Sam. She slept for a restless few hours, and then she woke up, and when she couldn't get back to sleep, decided to make herself a cup of tea. She was almost out of the bedroom before she noticed the red ribbon tied around her wrist. It ran to the floor, into a pile of ribbon, gathered at her feet. She was still dopey with sleep, and she started to gather the ribbon up, and it was only as she did that she realized it didn't end in the pile at her feet, but continued toward the stairs. And she followed it down the stairs and past the tree and into the kitchen. By the time she got to the back door, she had gathered an armful of red ribbon, and she was smiling. Dave and Morley have a pear tree in the corner of their backyard. Morley followed the trail of ribbon out the back door and across the yard to the pear tree. The end of the ribbon, the end not tied to her wrist, led to a switch attached to the base of the tree and a note that read, "Merry Christmas. I chose you. Love, Dave." Morley looked up the bedroom window and then back at the tree, and then she flicked the switch, and the most amazing thing happened. The pear tree slowly and gracefully came to life. Little lights began to snap on in the branches above her head, and then, as if the tree had been animated by Walt Disney himself, the lights spread along the branches until the entire tree was glowing a dark red crimson, a crimson like dark wine that cast a magical glow over the backyard. Dave woke at 3, and he reached out his arm for his wife, and when he didn't find her, he lay there trying to will himself awake, and he got up and called her name, and then he walked to the bedroom window and looked out, and Morley was sitting at the picnic table, wearing his work boots, the laces undone, his winter coat over her nightie, and a toque that belonged to Sam on her head, and she was cradling a mug of tea between her hands. From the perspective of the bedroom, she looked about 12 years old. It started to snow, big, fat flakes of snow dropping out of the sky, and Morley was staring at the snow as it floated out of the darkness into the circle of red light. Dave pushed the bedroom window open and said, "Merry Christmas." And Morley bent down and made a snowball, glowing now as she stood in the light of the tree, her hair wet and sticking to her forehead. Working not so quickly that Dave hadn't had time to gather a handful of snow off the window ledge himself. The two of them threw their snowballs at almost the same moment, and they both laughed in wonder when they collided in midair, spraying snow like a shower of icy fireworks through the silence of the night.